Can you read my ear?
Is there some
consideration of income for the borrower?
Yes, there is.
Okay, what's that requirement?
The net income of the borrower has to be 50% or more derived from agricultural uses. And what we are arguing is that the borrower in this case would be LLC Hoya Andalusia Farms. There are multiple reasons why individuals set up companies, corporations, or separate entities. So Cardenas has chosen to set up a separate entity. The reason why we don't matter, but they chose to set up one. And that was put in the record.
So both tracks are under the LLC?
Correct.
Correct.
From my knowledge, the track, the barn track, the track, the after track were owned by the LLC.
Is that one track or two tracks?
Two tracks are like three.
We're talking about two loans, aren't we?
Correct.
House loan and a barn loan?
Yeah. I mean, they're under five separate notes, but generally they finance to build a house, and generally they finance to build a stable, and then acquire horses, stable barn. So you get to do this too. They refinanced it with the SBA loan. There's numerous agricultural security instruments. The bank also gave a 60-day notice when there was a default. So they, in my opinion, treated it as one of the two notes, if you will, as an agricultural debt. The bank attempts to argue that because Dr. Cardenas and Mrs. Cardenas gave personal guarantees, therefore we can look at Dr. Cardenas' income as a borrower. The statute does not say borrower includes guarantors.
Does it define borrower?
It does define borrower, Your Honor. It reads a borrower means an individual, limited liability company, corporation, trust, cooperative, joint venture, or other entity, entitled to contract and engage in farming or ranching who derives 50% more of his or her income from farming or ranching and hold agricultural loan. That's a statutory section 2-4802 subpart 2.
And of course, wasn't Dr. Cardenas one of the makers on some of these notes?
On some of the five, but not all of the five. I would argue that the LLC was the maker, if you will, on the notes for the F person.
I want to return to Judge Miller Lerman's previous question, which you answered. The statute doesn't state a consequence for the failure of a financial institution to get notice under the Farm Mediation Act. From whence do you derive any consequence whatsoever? From what principle of law?
That's a great question. It's a statutory omission that leaves litigants scratching their head and with the common sense conclusion that statutes have to mean something. Therefore, banks don't get the ability to ignore the Farm Mediation Act merely because the legislature says you can't do it. It says in the statute under 2-4807, prior to instituting a proceeding on an agricultural debt. Two questions here, what the proceeding would be. One could be the notice of default. Two, the second proceeding could be the two separate deficiency lawsuits that were filed subsequent to those.
Isn't proceeding a term of art that clearly means a legal proceeding in court?
I think that's a rendering that would make sense. So that would be a deficiency lawsuit that was filed.
So it would be, it wouldn't be the non-judicial foreclosure, it would be the subsequent deficiency action.
Before you come to court, that's typically why mediation is used. You know, show some type of good faith to mediate, here at least provide notice, and that's all we're arguing, and they just did.
But none of the, neither this court nor the Court of Appeals has interpreted the provision of the Farm Mediation Act that you're relying on.
Correct. I believe it is this is a case of first impression for my research. And statutes need to be enforced, need to have some meaning. I don't think they can simply be ignored because it was forgotten or deemed irrelevant.
Thank you.
I'll reserve this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Peterson, good morning to you.
To some extent,
on matters outside the record, namely others incorrect statements of the law. Rather than re-argue our brief on the threshold points that we left on those. This was a jury trial, as the court knows, and jury took very little time to reject the appellant's argument, hold the arguments. The first assignment of errors, the jury should have found that the appellee failed to credit the cost of $100,000. That was never presented to the jury. This is the first time I was aware of it when I read the appellant's brief. The only evidence in the trial is the bank president's testimony, how the debt was calculated. They cleared the $100,000 by the director of operation, by the same testimony. There's reference in the reply brief to bank having proven its debt. It's clear that we did, and no challenge to that, no cross-examination. We don't think there's any validity in that first assignment of error. Second assignment of error is that Farm Mediation Act discussion that the court was just having. The other part of that is the appellants had moved from the state of Nebraska. They weren't residents. They weren't conducting business. So at the time, whatever started, they were gone. And if you look at that act, there's a lot of vagueness to it. And I'm old enough to remember the circumstances under which it came about and the idea that they had discussions. Well, there were discussions going on here. But there's no bar to recovery. And I can't believe that there's an entitlement for a person who's a resident of Kentucky to take advantage of the Nebraska Farm Mediation Act. They did not meet the definition of borrowers. Their tax returns show that they were an entity. They used the schedule, I can't remember what it is, E, I believe, for their horse breeding business to take deductions. And it's a gross income. I believe Mr. Eager might have said net income. I think it's a gross income, 50%. And they just didn't meet that. It never really crossed my mind that they would ever consider it. In terms of consequences, I think the thing to do would have been to have raised in district court, we should have been able to get a farm mediation notice out of this. That was never raised. None of this happened when we got to trial. I don't believe there's anything in that Farm Mediation Act that applies here. Excuse me. Third assignment of error had
wasn't,
to do
with... Wasn't the Farm Mediation Act raised as a defense in the answer?
I believe that it may... yes, I believe you're right now. That you never a request for any kind of injunction or anything. The third assignment of error had to do with trustee requirements. I believe that they are incorrect on the law here. I believe I've looked at the exhibits and the statutes. I think that the notices provided by a bank were accurate. I don't think you can confuse those with this is the statutory process. Whatever the bank president's demand letter says or whatever the loan documents might provide in some areas, we needed to follow the statutes. I think we did. They also indicated that they tried to cure the default. There's no evidence of that anywhere in the record that there was ever an attempt to actually cure the default. There was discussion about it.
There was never a tender.
No tender. In fact, there was a refusal to pay any more money. The fourth assignment of error had to do with fair market value of the property that was sold. The Judge Rowland's instruction on efficiency was very clear. Told the jury how to figure the debt. Talked about the fair market value or the sale bid. Most of the time when we do these, we're looking at trying to prove fair market value. In this case, the sale bid actually exceeded what the evidence on fair market value was. The bank bid too much. They bid $480,000 parcels, resold them within a couple of months for $27,000 less. That's after they put in $40,000 in improvements. So the jury was right in the way they handled it. The judge was right in his instruction. There are numerous arguments. We don't think there are evidence to support those arguments or allegations. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Can I ask you to go back to, I think maybe it's the second assignment of error. In any event, you were referring to the Schedule E and how you think that informs your argument.
The exhibits, and I don't have the numbers in trial, but the exhibits with the tax returns showed that Christina and Jose Cardenas made X number of dollars. And factored into that was the schedule. I think it's E, I should know that, but it had to do with a separate business. It'd be like a schedule.
But I'm sorry, the schedule to which you refer, if our alphabet's wrong, lead you to suggest they're hobbyists,
basically,
essentially.
I didn't actually come up with that term, Matt Peterson did, but it pretty well describes what we just said.
Okay.
It's not a Schedule F, which is normally a farm income expense schedule. It's one for a business. And It was a losing business throughout, but the fact remains that they treated it all as one. And now to come and pull out that little portion of it that lost every year and say the gross income is treated on its own is not a fair interpretation.
Thank you.
We'd ask that the court affirm the jury verdict, the judgment. Are there other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
1 minute, 12 seconds.
1 minute and 12 seconds, Mr. Deaver.
Yeah,
you may.
One thing to point out in my rebuttal is the schedule that matters, is Schedule C and Schedule F. There was two different schedules depending on the year that was filed. Those are filed because it's a single-member limited liability company. Therefore, it is separated. The disregarded tax entity, it doesn't have to file a separate corporate tax return. Its tax return balance is put on the owner's balance through a schedule.
It's an LLC with what? Just these two members?
Just one member.
One member. A one-member LLC, which wouldn't require a filing.
Yeah, and that's why.
That's what that's about. Okay, thank you.
And to point out the distinction, I think it's a slippery slope to even get into whether this was a hobbyist equine business or a commercial serious enterprise. All startups suffer from speculative gambles, and this was definitely a speculative gamble to be in Nebraska, to do Andalusian horses and disseminate, if you will, semen throughout the United States, was largely what she's selling with a little horse riding on the side. I think the distinction whether it was a hobbyist or serious enterprise is not a legal distinction that should raise any merit. It should be viewed on how they reported it. They treated it as a serious entity. They lost serious capital in doing so, and we're just asking that the statute that they are entitled to receive benefit from, of course.
Your argument is that Dr. Cardenas is not, he's not part of the entity, and consequently his income shouldn't be in the calculation under the Farm Mediation Act. That's basically your argument, correct?
Exactly.
Now, if Dr. Cardenas is properly calculated, there's no doubt you don't meet the 50% test.
Correct.
All right. Thank you.
Your Honors.
Thank you very much. That can